Welcome back to Four of a Kind podcast, where you will learn from real life experiences of amazing women and male allies too, who support our mission to increase women's representation in business leadership. You will hear from founders, investors, startups, corporate leaders, and our own journeys too. We want this podcast to empower you to go start that business, take that big job, and do it with confidence. So join us and exciting guests, and let's figure out what we can do to get there.
Hi, everyone. This is Grace, and we are joined today by a very special guest, Mike Cardamone, CEO and managing partner of Accelerprise, which is a B2B SaaS-focused accelerator and fund. Mike, welcome to the show, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be on.
I'm also joined by my co-host, Lauren. I'll let her say hello.
Hey, guys.
So Lauren and I actually went to business school with Mike's twin brother, Matt. So shout out to Matt. We appreciate the intro. And yes, they look almost alike, although I could tell the difference, actually. Mike, before we dive into your current role at Accelerprise, can you tell us a little bit about your background and maybe the roles you've had leading up to your current role now at Accelerprise?
Sure. Yeah. So yes, my twin brother, my identical twin brother and I, we were originally from upstate New York. I also went to business school in New York and Columbia. And then after business school, wanted to move out to San Francisco and get into tech. And that was in 2008. So right as the financial world was collapsing, but basically was kind of fortunate enough to end up at Box when it was about 25 people. As their first BD hire, as they were kind of making that transition from being primarily a consumer-facing company to be more of a B2B-facing company, start to think about how to get distribution into businesses through partnerships and BD efforts. And so worked there for a while. And then after that, went to another startup called Academics Direct in the ed tech space that someone I knew was on the board of, and they recruited me to come over and again run partnerships for them. So did a lot of kind of go-to-market partnership marketing type of stuff there as well. And we built that company to about 20 million plus in revenue 4 years I was there. And then in 2014, you know, started looking around, and I had 6 to 7 years of operating experience, mostly in go-to-market roles at pretty high-growth companies, and was doing some consulting and advising to startups. I was dabbling with, you know, some small angel checks on the investing side, and started talking to people in my network who had built kind of the first generation of SaaS companies. So people who were founders, CEOs, early employees of, you know, companies like Box and Salesforce and Marketo and Zendesk and companies like that, about the idea of doing a SaaS focused accelerator. And so happy to talk more about how that all came together. But that was kind of my road leading up to Accelerprise in 2014.
So now you're with Accelerprise. So I think some of our listeners it'd probably be good to give them a good definition of what an accelerator is and what it means to have your role being the CEO and managing partner at Accelerprise.
Yeah, so it's kind of the role, I'll talk about the role because that's evolved quite a bit since starting in 2014 to now, and then I'll talk about accelerators more broadly. But basically, like I said, in 2014, kind of convinced a critical mass of these great operators to buy into the idea that there were a lot of generalist accelerators out there. So accelerators that focus on any type of business and they run you through a program. But there were only a few in the country that were focused on B2B SaaS companies. And we felt like if you could keep the cohort sizes small and be very hands-on, specifically helping companies with early go-to-market, that you could add a lot of value. When I looked around, you know, one of the accelerators that existed that was focused on B2B was Accelerprise, which was running in Washington, D.C., run by three people. And, you know, we looked at it and they were kind of running it part-time. They had all started their own companies, but we decided to work with them. We licensed the brand, but launched a whole separate, you know, fund and accelerator in San Francisco, branded as Accelerprise as well. And for the first 2 years, it was just me, you know, wore a lot of different hats doing everything, trying to just run around like crazy, trying to find companies and add as much value as I could through my network. And so now, you know, fast forward 5 years, we're 8 full-time, we'll be 9 by the end of the year. We run the program in San Francisco, New York, and Toronto. And my role has evolved quite a bit. So I no longer run the day-to-day of any of the locations. So we have a managing director and my partner in San Francisco who runs the San Francisco office and location for the accelerator. And then we have a managing director in New York who runs the program in New York, and a managing director in Toronto who's going to run the program in Toronto, which launches in January. And so my role is actually a mix of, you know, continuing to manage the funds and fundraise for new funds, just kind of, you know, help across all three locations where I can in looking at companies and kind of managing people and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, my role has definitely evolved. And then also, you know, spending a lot of time with our alumni and portfolio company where we can support as well. But yeah.
Great. And maybe just a quick overview of what accelerators are in general.
Yeah. So an accelerator is a very hands-on approach to early kind of, not necessarily company formation. Most of them are past company formation stage, but basically, you know, we work with kind of pre-seed companies. So companies that haven't raised an institutional round of funding yet, but have aspirations of building a venture scale type business, who typically it's kind of the founding team. They probably have some early version of a product. They may or may not have some early customers, and they want maybe their first time founders or first time kind of building a B2B company, or, you know, they just feel like they have a lack of skill set in a certain area or a lack of access to a network, and they go to an accelerator to then try to solve for those. So typically an accelerator will invest some amount up front for some amount of equity. It's usually a defined amount of time. So accelerators, ours is a 4-month program, some are 3 months, some are 6 months, but some amount of time where you get this hands-on support, you get access to a network, you get, you know, office hours, mentors, and then, you know, what the accelerator does from there can vary quite a bit from accelerator to accelerator, but mm-hmm. the idea is to be a hands-on partner to a founding team to help them go from kind of the very, very early stages to hopefully early traction and early growth and kind of raising that first institutional round.
Right. So maybe let's talk about the business model of accelerators a little bit. There's obviously the fund component, which is very similar to a traditional VC in a sense that you provide some funding in exchange for an equity stake and you earn, you know, management fee on the capital you manage plus the carry, which is essentially the share of profits on the investments you make. But there's also the programming component. Can you touch on that a little bit on how that works or how accelerators make money on that component if they do?
Yeah, so we don't. So some programs charge a program fee. So what they'll do is they'll invest a certain amount for a certain amount of equity, and then they'll immediately kind of charge you out of that invested dollars, charge you a program fee to help pay for the programming. At the end of the day, that's just a kind of a different way to structure the all, which is ultimately the same thing of you're just charging your LPs to run the program. So instead, we're just very explicit with our LPs of like, here's what our operating budget is, here's what we need to run the program. And so we work out what the fee structure is going to be. And instead of being a traditional kind of 2% a year on committed capital, like most traditional venture funds would be, ours is much more kind of bespoke around like, okay, here's what we need to operate, which largely means we need to front load a lot of what you would pay in fees over the first kind of 2 to 3 years when we're actually deploying this capital. And then we just have to raise a fund every kind of 2 to 3 years to continue to do that under that structure. So instead of charging the company as a program fee, we just have a kind of unique and different fee structure at the fund level that we charge our limited partners for the operations. And then, you know, and then we add additional revenue from, you know, things like sponsorships and other partnerships we do with either service providers or technology vendors who can, you know, add value to our portfolio.
So can you walk us through kind of the process, how companies apply for this? And then, you know, kind of you talked about the access that they might have to some of the sponsorships. So some of maybe the perks that they have going and working with some of these technology vendors, how do you go out and find them? How do you go and find the companies or do they apply to you? How does it all kind of work? How do you do the matchmaking?
Yeah, so we find companies through three channels. One is inbound, so companies just hear about us through you know, whatever, either podcasts like this or word of mouth or other content, and they apply. So that's one channel. Another channel is referrals. So we get a lot of companies referred to us, both from our alumni, so our portfolio companies who are founders out in an ecosystem meeting other founders, and they refer them to us, or, you know, mentors in our network or other investors in our network maybe see something they think is interesting, but it's too early for them, and they think they might need some go-to-market support before they'd really take a serious look. So we get a lot of referrals from our network. And then the third channel is outbound. And so, you know, on the outbound side, we do a mix of, you know, really kind of digging in as a team on what are certain categories we're interested in at a high level. And then we'll, you know, go try to find companies that kind of fit into those high level buckets through a lot of different, through Twitter, Product Hunt, Launching Next, you know, AngelList, through a lot of different places. And then we'll do some outbound to companies that look interesting and kind of are at the right stage for our accelerator and potentially a fit from a type of company standpoint. And so that's how we kind of target them on the outbound side. But yeah, a lot of companies coming in through inbound and through referrals as well.
Gotcha. And so you touched on it a little bit, but, you know, when you're, once you do have, you know, the pool of applicants, what are you kind of doing to screen for them? Like, what are you looking for that you'd say, yes, this is a fit for our cohort?
Yeah. So, you know, it's a lot of different things, but I would say at a high level, we're looking for, you know, is there a good founder market fit? Like, why is this founding team working on it? What do they know about this market that maybe is unique or that gives them kind of an unfair advantage to solve for this problem? Do we think it's a big enough market opportunity? Like, and do they have aspirations of trying to build a really big company? Can the founders speak with clarity and conviction about their market and how it's evolving and how they could win in that market? Have they shown a history of being able to execute in previous roles, even if they're a first-time founder? So those are all things we look for on kind of the market and the founder. And then in regards to the business, we'll look a lot at, you know, business model fit. Like, does their go-to-market strategy align with their contract sizes? Or, you know, if not, can their average contract sizes, you know, grow over time? And if so, how does that happen? And can they talk about that and speak to it? Do they have an understanding of how that's going to work? If they have early traction, obviously speaking to customers and understanding, you know, how vital is the product for them? Talking to the founders about, you know, how did you win those customers? Who did you win them over? Do they have an understanding of like why they're winning deals or why they're losing deals? So we'll look at a lot of stuff like that. And then we'll also look at how helpful do we think we can be through our network and our experience. You know, and then we keep our cohort size small. So, you know, we'll work with maybe 7 to 10 companies per cohort per location so that we can be very hands-on.
And so, you know, you mentioned they are very early stage companies, so they probably don't have, you know, very robust, I mean, they might not even have a very robust product yet, but I'm assuming they really probably wouldn't be having, you know, a lot of diligence around financials. So what kind of key pieces of diligence are you looking for when you start maybe digging into some of these companies?
Yeah, so we do like on the product side, we'll do a product demo. And what we're looking for there is just, do they have early signs of being good at product execution? So we understand that it's almost never going to be a fully baked product and it might even be buggy, but like, have they thought about the user experience and UI? And if it's not good, are they acknowledging that it's not good and that's an area they need to improve on? Does it do kind of the basic things it says they say they will do? So we'll do some kind of digging on kind of the product and assess what we think the product execution risk is. Mm-hmm. On the financial side, like, yeah, there's not usually a lot of historical financials to really dig into on the diligence side, but what we really dig into is how much cash do you have in the bank and, you know, what is your burn every month and how is that going to evolve over the next kind of 6 to 12 months? And what milestones do you plan on getting to? So we can assess, like, do we think they're going to get enough traction or make enough progress with the business to raise more capital, given, you know, how much runway they have, you know, based on their burn and how much cash is in the bank. So we'll dig in on that from a financial diligence standpoint. And that's different for every company, depending on how long their sales cycles are and, you know, how much personal runway the founders have and things like that. So there's a lot of variables around that. And then, you know, and then, like I said, we'll really dig into kind of the market. How big is the market opportunity? Who else is in it? How well funded are they? You know, have they won any deals over other competitors? And if so, why? And so we try to really dig into the market as well.
Gotcha. So do you think, you know, you mentioned that some of the things that might be questionable when you're talking to companies would be, you know, if they're maybe over optimistic about contract sizes or market sizes, and maybe it leads to that there might not be as knowledgeable about that area as they believe they are. That sounds like a pretty obvious or big mistake that you'd see, but what kind of other mistakes, or is that the most common one that you see from founders that would turn you away, or like when they're giving their pitches aren't, you know, is something that maybe you'd say, oh, that's a big mistake?
I think that this is for me, I don't know if my colleagues would say any different, but when founders, if we start digging in on customers and pipeline and contract sizes, and they can't answer those as the like CEO of a early stage company who has, you know, maybe 10 customers and you can't tell me who your customer, or maybe even 10 companies in your pipeline, you can't tell me like who's the biggest contract in your pipeline and how, what size is it? I always view that as a bit of a yellow flag. Like, I feel like you should be, if you're really, like, you need to be somewhat obsessive about building a big business if you're to really do it. Like, it's just so hard to do. And if you're not obsessing enough that you don't even know like who's the biggest potential customer in your pipeline and can't tell me what the contract size is, That's definitely something that I always am surprised when I talk to founders who don't know their number. I don't know their customer, like who's their biggest customer and what size contract are they, or who's in the pipeline, or, you know, those sort of things. And then I think the other that I'll add to that too is, you know, because we talked to so many companies that are so early, a lot of them have pilots. And this isn't necessarily one that is a yellow flag, but it's something that I think more founders should be aware of, and that we coach a lot, is just that, you know, they have a pilot, and maybe that, you know, maybe it's a paid pilot for a certain amount of time. And I'll ask them, you know, have you communicated with the customer on like what success looks like for them, so that you know when you get to the end of the pilot, it's not a gray area of like, did this work or not? Are they going to convert? Like, you should be able to track throughout the course of the pilot, is it trending towards like the KPIs that they said they were measuring to find out if this pilot was successful, so that you can give me a good answer around like a likelihood of that pilot converting into an annual deal. And I think a lot of founders don't do enough of that defining upfront to understand, you know, what it takes for a pilot to be successful and what they care about.
I think that's a really interesting point, Mike, because me personally, being on the enterprise side as a customer of a B2B SaaS, I meet with a lot of B2B SaaS startups that sort of pitch their companies, their technology, and that we can use, deploy either at the firm or take them to our clients. I think that is one key area where I sort of ask the questions around, you know, when you deploy these pilots, is there a way to measure your value proposition? Whatever it is that you're promising to a corporate that they can accomplish, is there a way to measure that, and how are you measuring it? And that is one item that I don't know that a lot of founders that I've talked to personally can easily answer. And it's hard to sell something, right, if you can't measure that value you're providing.
Yeah. And I get it. Like, you know, if you have an opportunity to sell to a big company and it's, you know, you don't have many customers yet, like you're just excited to get your foot in the door. And then maybe you're just excited that they're logging into your app, but that's not enough. Like, you need to really understand what are they looking at and evaluating internally to decide if they're actually going to sign an annual contract for this product. And then how do you optimize towards that? And I don't think enough founders do that.
Yeah, agreed. So I guess maybe switching gears a little bit from the screening and due diligence to the actual programming. So you've narrowed down all your startups down to the top 7 to 10. They start the program. What happens during that 4-month program, and do the startups go through the same curriculum?
Yeah, so I think there's kind of two parts to how we think about this. One is, there is kind of the programmatic piece you would expect from an accelerator, where we have about 1 to 2 days a week, we have people coming in to do office hours, workshops, roundtable discussions, largely on pretty tactical topics. Sometimes if it's a bigger name CEO, it's a more kind of ask me anything, more aspirational session, but most of them are very tactical. So it might be, you know, the head of demand gen from a company coming in and talking about kind of demand gen strategies for SaaS companies or content marketing or pricing or sales. And that curriculum, we don't think of it as curriculum necessarily in the sense that like it's a schoolroom style. Like we try to have very interactive or one-on-one office hours or interactive workshops. And we don't force companies to go to anything. They can just come to what, you know, they think is helpful for them. But that is the same schedule for all the founders throughout the program. And they can kind of pick and choose what they want to come to. The other piece of it is, again, going back to the idea of like, we keep our cohort sizes very small. And we do that very intentionally so that we can almost act as an extension of the founding team and really sit down with the founders in the beginning and say, like, okay, what does success look like for you in the next 6 or 12 months? What are your high level kind of big aspirational KPIs that you want to track? And then let's work backwards and figure out what are weekly KPIs we can track along the way to see how you're progressing towards that larger goal. And then what can we do to help you achieve those weekly KPIs? And so we'll do weekly one-on-ones with each company and really dig in. And it might be, you know, a lot, we're very hands-on around like go-to-market. So we do a lot of like helping you identify your ideal customer profile, building out lead lists, set up demand gen strategies or drip campaigns, have your record sales conversations and really coach you through those. So a lot of it is around go-to-market. Mm-hmm. Some of it could be just like one-off introductions to, you know, mentors who we think, you know, maybe aren't coming in for the program, but we think could be particularly helpful to you or have connections that might be particularly helpful to you. And then customer introductions. So then we look at across our network, like where can we make introductions to potential customers to help kind of speed up the sales process? And so, you know, we really get hands-on around all of that, which I think is very uniquely tailored to whatever the company needs and what their goals are. And then, you know, obviously around fundraising of, you know, whenever we collectively feel like the company's ready to fundraise, even if it's not around our, you know, investor weeks at the end of the program, which is, by the way, just an arbitrary date and like clearly shouldn't be the right point in time for every company to fundraise. Whenever they're ready, whether it's during the program or after, and we all collectively agree on that, we'll help with the fundraising process as well, which is, you know, helping them hone in on the story and the pitch and working on the pitch deck and then making introductions to investors.
Got it. And I guess speaking of mentors, how do you pick or how do you source the mentors? Is it basically just your own personal network and maybe the alumni that you've accumulated over the years? Or do you sort of start with the startups, look at, you know, what their needs are, and then come up with a short list of potential mentors that you can tap into? And then secondly, are those mentors paid?
So to answer that first, no, our mentors are not paid. They all volunteer their time and are motivated for different reasons. I've found some do it because they want deal flow for kind of advisor, more formal advisor type of relationships where they get equity and spend more time with a company if they really click with them. But that's not something we formally facilitate, but it organically happens all the time. Some do it for deal flow, for angel investing. And some just want to give back to the, you know, give back to the ecosystem and give back to the community. And then I would say lastly, some are doing it either because they're at a bigger company and they just like get, you know, feel excited by working with startups, or they're thinking of doing their own startup, you know, whatever. And they just want to kind of see what it's like to kind of grind in those early stages. And so, you know, there's different motivations, but none of them are paid. And then how we source vendors, it's a mix. So some is just, you know, we have kind of a core group of mentors that, you know, largely came from our network and kind of second degree connections of our immediate network that have been referred in over a period of time over the last 5 years of building this, where, you know, they come in fairly consistently and do some of these workshops and office hours. But also to your point around reaching out to new mentors. So part of what we'll do when we're working with the companies and coming up with the KPIs and their goals and what success looks like is identifying who in our network who maybe isn't already a formal mentor of ours could be particularly helpful for this company. And if they're not already a formal mentor, let's loop them in and kind of introduce them to the AccelPrize family by having them do a one-on-one office hour with this one company that we think they could be particularly helpful to and or maybe a particularly good fit for them. And so that's how we approach the mentor piece. And, you know, there's always some mentors kind of ebb and flow on how much time they have and how much time they can put in. So we're always kind of sourcing new mentors, but it happens we do some outbound, very targeted based on what the companies coming in need, but a lot of the inbound comes from just like kind of organic, like referred by a founder who worked with someone who thought they were really helpful, or by another one of our mentors, or someone pulls, like maybe the VP of sales at a company is a mentor and they're like, hey, my CMO or VP of marketing would really like to get involved too. Can I introduce you to them? Like that sort of stuff happens all the time as well. So that's how we kind of pull together the mentor network.
Gotcha. So now companies have gone through the program, and I mean, what have you seen has made some of these companies the most become more successful and go on and raise, basically get bigger rounds and be successful in like the larger VC space after going through the program?
Yeah. So, I mean, so the obvious one is traction, right? Traction solves a lot of things. And the faster you're growing and getting customers and getting people to pay for whatever you're building, the easier kind of downstream fundraising becomes. But aside from that, which is the obvious thing, I would say there's like certain personality traits that we see that I think have correlated to founders being getting off to a great start with their company. Like certainly raising downstream capital doesn't guarantee you're going to be successful. But one is just a relentless focus on execution and always getting better. And always getting better, when I say always getting better as a company, but also getting better personally as a leader and CEO and manager and whatever else they're working on. And so just being like relentlessly focused on that, I think is like a huge thing. Another one is just high customer empathy. So really, you know, understanding the buyer and what they care about, down to even the individual buyer, like what are the KPIs that the individual at the company is comped on, and what do they care about, and how does your product kind of impact that for them, and like really just understanding what they care about and understanding what you need to build for them to care about it. And then, you know, the last is just, which is always like a little bit of a gut test of like, you know, one thing we look at is like, would we work for this person? And I think when you really boil that down, it comes down to like, can they talk about their market with clarity and conviction, talk about how it's going to evolve, why they're going to win in the market, and just like do it in a very clear and concise way? Because that trait, if you can do that really well, that goes a long way in fundraising. It goes a long way in your ability to recruit great early hires, which is something we see in companies that do well early on, is like their ability to recruit. And it helps in sales. And so I think that those are the types of things that we see kind of correlate to early success. And then I think as you get a little bit bigger and raise more capital, you know, that's important still, but you set the tone kind of early on with how good of people you hire and, you know, the product that you're building. And then, you know, it becomes a lot more on kind of blocking and tackling and execution later on. In the beginning, it's all about like recruiting great people, you know, really building for what the customer needs and just being like very focused on execution and getting better and being able to tell that story clearly and concisely with conviction around the market.
Gotcha. So that's one pathway that basically companies would take after going through like quote unquote graduating from the program. What are kind of the different pathways that the companies you've seen kind of end up going?
Like I said, most of the companies we work with have aspirations of building a venture scale business. In a lot of cases, that means they need capital to do that and to grow as quickly as they want. So most of the companies coming to the program are trying to raise capital. Obviously, not all of them do, and some don't end up working out. They run out of capital for a number of different reasons. Some do raise capital, and that can be either a pre-seed round or a full kind of institutional seed round after the program or even during the program. And then there are some where I feel like they kind of just end up taking the mentality of wanting to be more sustainable and more bootstrapped-esque, but not fully bootstrapped. And so they'll raise some money in convertible notes or safes and just kind of do rolling closes as they need the capital. And then eventually get to the point where they're self-sustaining and can either grow, then they'll have options. Then they can either, you know, raise more capital down the road once they've got significant traction. They can just be profitable and kind of grow off of profit, or they can leverage debt to grow. And so we have some of our companies that end up going that route for whatever, you know, for reasons, maybe they decide they don't think they can build as big of a business as they thought, but they certainly can still build a meaningful business, you know, so for various reasons. But most of the companies that come through the program want to and try to raise capital afterwards in either a pre-seed or seed round. And, you know, obviously as early as we're getting involved, not all of them are going to work out, but we've had a pretty high hit rate on kind of companies getting follow-on funding afterwards.
Yeah. So I know we're getting close to the end here. So switching gears one last time, I think it's great to see that your team at AccelerPrize is close to maybe about 40% women. And we know you've invested in female founded startups. Just curious, do you have any general observations or themes that you can share around how female founders pitch their companies? Are there striking differences, you know, relative to their male counterparts? And maybe a follow-up to that, areas where they need more coaching on, which identifying those areas will just help us identify how we can help them increase their chances of getting funded.
Yeah, so I don't have stats around this, so this is purely anecdotal. So I don't know, you know, I don't want to make a broad-reaching comment around this, but I do feel like, in general, female founders tend to be a little bit more humble in the process, like almost like more than they should be sometimes, where I think they just like, you know, some men have a tendency to kind of overinflate their background or business progress or traction, where I've definitely noticed some women who tend to kind of undersell their background or undersell kind of their business progress or traction. And so I think the only thing I would say around like more coaching on it would be just to not be timid around bragging a little bit. Like, you know, we've met so many, I think a third of our portfolio are kind of underrepresented. I forget exactly what percent are female versus other underrepresented groups, but it's something that, you know, we think about for sure, but I wouldn't say it's something that we focus on. I think it's just the nature of having a diverse team has led us to just organically invest in a diverse set of founders. And, you know, I think there are so many female founders that we've met with who are very impressive, but it doesn't come out at first because they just they're too humble or they don't feel like they should be bragging about it. And so I would just say, like, don't be afraid to brag about yourself and make sure investors walk away knowing how impressive you actually are. So that would be the one thing. And like I said, I don't think it's like a huge, we see some men who do that as well and vice versa. So I don't think it's certainly not a generalist thing, but maybe skewed slightly more where we see that in female founders than male founders, just anecdotally. And I think that's like an easy thing to fix.
Yeah, no, I think that's an extremely helpful piece of anecdote that I know a lot of our listeners, particularly the female founders, really could take with them and take to their next pitch.
Cool.
We are, in fact, getting to the end here. And so before we let you run away, are there any final words of advice that you think would be good for early stage startups to know about? And if they're thinking about doing an accelerator program, kind of what are the things they should be thinking about preparing for?
Yeah, I think for any founder who's thinking about doing an accelerator program, I would just say I would really think about, what do you want to get out of an accelerator? And what does success look like for you coming out of an accelerator? And make sure the accelerators you're looking at can help you achieve those. So, you know, match up, like, what are your skill sets? What network do you have? And like, how do you add to that to move faster than you otherwise, you know, would have? And then talk to founders. 100% do the work and talk to founders who have gone through the program, whether you reach out to them or ask the people running the accelerator to introduce you to them. You know, talk to one or two founders who have gone through the program just to validate that, you know, the people you're going to kind of work with over the next 3 or 4 months are as helpful as they say they're going to be.
Awesome. Yeah, I actually think, Gracie, that's something we should have a discussion about, maybe doing a future episode on, is like how to network successfully. Because, I mean, so many things in business, it's within hiring, within finding different other founders like you. It's all about networking and being successful and have an acquired skill for that, for sure. All right. So thanks so much, Mike, for joining us. That was extremely helpful. And we definitely learned a lot about AccelerPrize and the broader accelerator landscape. People talk about VCs a lot and their role in bringing kind of the founders' visions to life. But the role that accelerators play is really important. For people that want to get in touch with you or any of the B2B SaaS startups and would like to apply for some of these AccelerPrize runs, what would be the best way to reach you?
Yeah, so people can email me at just mike@accelerprize.vc, or I'm on Twitter at mgcardamone, or they can apply at accelerprize.vc/apply.
Awesome. So if you'd like to check out AccelaPrize outside of that, we've included the website in the episode notes. Also connect with Mike on LinkedIn. And if you have any questions or comments, or you just want to say hi, you can always send us an email at fourofakindpodcast@gmail.com, or you can always follow us on Instagram at fourofakindpodcast for updates. And as always, don't forget to hit subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or Stitcher.
Well, that's it for today's show. Thanks again to our guest, Mike Cardamone, to my co-host Lauren, and to all of you for tuning in. Have a great weekend, everyone, and Happy New Year.
Thanks so much, guys.
Bye.
Great. Thanks.